Succession Season 2, Episode 4, Safe Room is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, and joining me here to talk about everything from this week of Succession, from the safety of a secure secret location, our panic room has been activated. Emily Fox, are you feeling okay?
I mean, I think I'm okay, but I do feel like an attack child could come through.
An attack child could sneak in. There is the possibility that we are not safe from attack children. It is possible that you, dear listener, you may not be safe with this podcast. It could be that this is August 30th as you are listening to this podcast, or even August 31st, maybe even the morning of September 1st. And you're like, wait a minute, Succession Season 2, Episode 4, that's supposed to be airing the night of September 1st on HBO. Why are they talking about it now? Are they from the future? Are they broadcasting from the future? And no, Emily, I don't think that we're from the future.
We are from the now.
We're from the now. We're from the now. And the time is now. HBO has indeed released Episode 4 early because it's Labor Day weekend. And they wanted to get ahead of the Labor Day weekend thing. And so they released Succession Season 2, Episode 4 on Friday, August 30th. So it is the afternoon of August 30th as Emily and I are recording our recap of Succession Season 2, Episode 4. If this is breaking news for you and you have not yet watched the episode, I strongly recommend that you do so. We are going to load you up with some non-spoiler content for the next minute or two before we get into full tilt spoiler mode. I was going to say full bore spoiler mode, full bore on the floor spoiler mode is about to be activated. Go watch the episode before you listen any further. We're going to spoil the hell out of this episode for you if you do not watch the episode. I'll also say that we're not doing feedback for this episode. We're going to have a midweek feedback show that's coming up. We have a special guest who will be on there making their debut on Post Show Recaps, a fixture in the lives of Emily Fox and I. We're very excited to talk to this person and break them in on the microphone. I think it's going to be a fun
time. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to that. So send us your stuff at Post Show Recaps, at Round Howard, at Emlet for that show. We would love to hear from you guys. Please send us your feedback. You can also use our feedback form, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. And I will also note, of course, that Succession podcasting here on Post Show Recaps, if that's what you're after, we've got an easy way for you to listen to that stuff. Of course, you can always subscribe to the main feed, but we have a Succession feed as well. Your ratings, your reviews would be kindly appreciated moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, before we get into the episode itself, Emily, I want to take a quick second to tell everybody about a different show that they could be binging this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. In fact, it's on Amazon Prime right now, and it's called Carnival Row. Have you heard of Carnival Row?
I haven't.
Do you want me to tell you about Carnival Row?
Please do.
It would be my absolute pleasure to tell you all about Carnival Row on Amazon right now. It's a one-hour fantasy drama series starring Orlando Bloom, no relation to Mike, and Cara Delevingne. It just dropped this weekend, and it's ready for your binging pleasure. Carnival Row is set in a Victorian fantasy world filled with mythological immigrant creatures whose exotic homelands were invaded by the empires of man. They struggle to coexist with humans, forbidden to live, love, or fly with freedom. Orlando Bloom plays Ryecroft Philostrate, also known as Philo, a police inspector investigating a string of gruesome murders threatening the uneasy peace of the row. Cara Delevingne plays Vignette Stonemoss, a fairy refugee who flees from her war-torn homeland to come to the Burg, where she must contend not only with rampant human prejudice against her kind, but with the secrets that have followed her to this new land. But even in darkness, hope lives as this human detective and fairy rekindle their dangerous affair despite an increasingly intolerant society. So if that sounds like it interests you, if that sounds like something you want to watch, you can come together this Labor Day weekend for Carnival Row, only on Amazon Prime Video.
Wow. Fairies, humans, and everyone in between.
And everybody in between. Let's talk about some human beings. Let's talk about the events of Succession Season 2, Episode 4, Safe Room. If you have made it this far into the podcast, I assume that you are now joining us in the panic room and you have watched the episode, or you don't care and you don't mind being spoiled, but that is weird to me. Safe Room, Emily Fox, what'd you think?
You are a man podcasting right now. And someday you might no longer be around. You might no longer be a man, but also a podcaster.
It is possible that someday I will die.
Yes, as we all will.
As we all will. And it is possible that at some point in the next, 30 to 60 minutes, this podcast will be over.
Yes.
And you will no longer be listening to us in your ears.
Because all podcasts must end.
As all things must. Great eulogy. for Safe Room, which was, you know, dealing with heavy subject matter as Succession often does, and doing so with a hilariously light touch through much of it, but also like emotional at points, like the ending.
This
especially.
Was a very emotional episode.
What did you think of it for real?
I loved it. I think every week I think that this episode that we've currently watched is my favorite, and then they add another one into the ranks. So this was just one more to add to the queue that I really love.
So season two versus season one so far, pound
for
pound.
I'm loving season two. I think season two sort of grasps what we all knew Succession is capable of, but is really like throwing it into a high octane mode.
They're coming into it, I think, or they came into it with a lot of confidence. Considering, I think, how the first season was received. And yeah. I think like they knew that like if they weren't like a juggernaut of a show yet, at least they were a show that was being really warmly received by the people who were embracing it. And I think that they decided, I think coming into Succession season two, I think Jesse Armstrong and the other writers and everybody else who is, you know, creatively involved in this series, I think they were like, well, it's just like make Succession even more Succession-y.
It's so good.
It's been great. It's been a really, really great season so far, and this episode is no exception. We get to see more of the Roy advancement on PGM. We get some stone cold classic material between Tom and Cousin Greg.
I mean, that was just like another level. It was so good this week.
You know, we get like Succession like going headlong into like fascism and Nazism, which is not funny at all. No. And yet they found a way to make it like really like bone-chillingly funny. Mm-hmm. You know, they managed to find ways to make an active shooter situation or the possibility of an active shooter situation. They managed to find levity in that. So it's just, I thought that this was this episode is one of the best examples we have yet of the really delicate tonal balance that Succession does.
Yes.
So deftly and unlike almost anything I've ever seen on TV before, where you don't know when it's a comedy, you don't know when it's a drama, you don't know how to define or classify this series. And I think given what it was contending with this week and the fact that we were, you know, walking away from it laughing so hard from so much of it is a real testament to the creative power of this show.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, the interactions between Cousin Greg and Tom, watching Shiv sort of trying to step up and do things and then kind of getting knocked back down again by Kendall. Watching Logan be in a situation where he's taking medication, but is he consistently taking it? Is Kendall in charge of that now? That's an interesting little, I don't know, piece of...
There's stuff to watch.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's stuff to watch. But I think as we're trying to like long game out some of what's going on here in season two, and where is that going to take us for the overall story of this series, I think there's a ton that we should be paying extreme attention to. So let's pay attention to it, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the episode begins where it ends. There's great symmetry in how this episode begins and how it closes out with Kendall on the roof. On floor 76.
Which doesn't make me feel super comfortable based on Kendall's mental state.
Bohr on the 76th floor as he is going up to the very top of the tower, very top of the building, scraping the skies of New York City. He's doing work when we see him at first. He's calling Rhea, who we're going to get to know in deeper detail, the CEO of PGM. He says, you know, Shakespeare Frank told me it's cool to make contact. I know you know him. He's a mutual friend. He kind of looks like Craig T. Nelson. He said it would be cool to connect, so hopefully we can connect. And he gets off the phone, and as he's getting off the phone, he just walks closer to the edge of the building and kind of just like puts his forehead against the glass for the first of three times in this episode. It is worth being concerned for Mr. Kendall, who we know has been through a lot lately, much of it by his own design, by his own hand. But given the fragile state he's in, certainly at the end of the episode, these images of him on the top of a building, evocative to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just feel better that there's actually a glass barrier there because it doesn't really feel like it. But, you know, he is trapped inside. So that's good, I guess. So he can't jump.
But if he really wanted to do it, I'm sure he'd find a way.
He also has been taking the stairs. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's we've seen him like do like the 4 a.m. workout routine in the past. That was when he was like,
I don't think he's trying to like burn calories
on
this.
That was when he was in peak or closer to peak physical condition before he relapsed and everything. Yeah, I don't think that he's like necessarily going for the workout so much as he's, you know, he's got energy to burn. He's got like, you know, I think, you know, certainly like in the
or does he not want to be detected?
It could
that's
be,
what I wonder.
It could be that we know from this episode he's being like very deeply watched.
Yeah,
he's under heavy surveillance. You know, the shoplifting shenanigans are ensuing, and he is being studied. So maybe he's hip to that at this point. I feel like he's not until closer to the end of the episode. But I don't know. I mean, like, I know, like, when I have been in funks, and granted, I have not been in the kind of funk that Kendall is in, specifically.
Unless you haven't told me something.
No, there's nothing. There are no actual skeletons in my closet, just the metaphorical ones. But regarding those metaphorical skeletons in my closet, when I've, like, been really, like, wallowing on that stuff and have been feeling very grim, I know for me, like, movement is something that helps me get out of it. So I'm sure that, like, for Kendall, who can't talk to anybody about it, he comes fairly close in this episode to talking to Shiv about it. I think, you know, going upstairs, getting some air, I think is probably, he feels like this is cathartic to some degree. But I think that there is that double meaning of like seeing everything from high above and like maybe I could just fly down to all of those ants below and go splat. And maybe this would all be a little bit easier, which is terrifying. And, you know, if we're on death watch for some of these characters,
On the list.
A lot of people were worried about it. It'd be hard to imagine Succession without Jeremy Strong as Kendall Roy, or Oedipus Roy, as he's described later in the episode. But, you know, I think you got to be at least a little bit worried given what we're seeing.
Definitely.
Things are intense around HQ in this episode as well. We go from that to street level, to what Kendall is looking at from high above. And there are protests happening at Waystar Royco because I guess there's been a recent hire made at ATN. This guy named, I think his name is like Ravenhead or something.
Ravenhead or Ravenwood. It made me think of the wine.
I think it's Ravenhead.
What's his first name?
I don't think they delivered it. I think
Tom says hi to him at one point, and then I think his first name is
all right. Well, maybe it said and we missed it, but I just like Ravenhead as a as a name, and that's about all that I like about this guy. Because there's all these protests that are happening outside of Waystar. Because they've hired Ravenhead, who is heavily speculated to be a fascist, a Nazi sympathizer, that he named his dog Blondie after Hitler's dog. I had no idea that Hitler's dog was named Blondie.
Different spelling. He had another dog named Blue Eyes. I don't know.
There are rumors that that this man got married at the Eagle's Nest, a Nazi stronghold from World War II. Rumors that he's read Mein Kampf. Turns out he's just maybe like a light reading, just like twice.
There were a few Easter eggs.
Yeah, a couple of Easter eggs
time,
for him to divine from the
which
reading.
Which is just such a... this is one of the show's brilliant moves, right? As we're sitting there talking about truly evil, horrible content, history, things that have been terrible that have bubbled to the surface again in real life, as well as in the show. And Tom is able to make you giggle over it.
Well, I think because like it makes you so uncomfortable.
Right.
I think part of, you know, I could not help but laugh at so much of this stuff because it's so horrible and way too close to reality.
Yeah.
So here it is front and center in this episode of Succession. And I feel like they dealt with it in a way where like they really... they put you in the heads of like a lot of powerful people where like the fascism itself isn't the problem so much as like the baggage that the fascism brings is like a PR problem.
Right.
And it's so disgusting, but it's so pathetic and ridiculous that you kind of can't help but laugh about it. Or at least we couldn't. But there's, you know, all these protests that are happening and like Antifa showing up, and it really just feels like it's ripped from today. There's a moment where like where Shiv, because Shiv is coming to work, right? Like we know that Shiv is...
she's been called in by Logan.
She's been given the tap, right? You know, like you come and you work for me now. It's time to bring you in. And so she's coming in and like she sees all these protests and she's like, who are these assholes? And Tom goes, those are our assholes. So that's the cold open of the episode. Great way to start. We go from there to Bright Star Adventure Park because young little Roman Roy is on an adventure of his own, a 6-week excursion into the park system, Emily.
Right. And this is to make good on basically bungling the deal with the Pierce family earlier on, being called a moron in front of all of his sort of work peers. Jerry had suggested this in the last episode, you know, go into management training, see if you can kind of make, you know, things right again with your father. So obviously he's showing up reluctant, very unhappy to be there. You know, making jokes, I think, even with who? The driver of like, come get me if you don't hear from me. You know, we don't know what's going to happen to me here. But he shows up and he's around
he
a whole bunch
like,
of...
I'm leaving Earth's orbit or something like that. Yeah. He's like going to outer space.
I mean, he's basically in quarantine, right? From his family where he needs to go and sort of fix everything. So he's put amongst all of these people who are like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to be part of this entire like training scenario. And he's just sitting there like, oh God, now what?
And he's going under a false name, right? Like he's going as
Ron Rockstone.
Ron Rockstone. Great porn name for
Roman
Roy.
Even though he's like
Roy.
In the training video for like a hot second.
Even though Roman Roy itself is already a decent porn name. But yeah, he's going under Ron Rockstone.
Yikes.
Yeah, and he goes and he watches the management training video. And it's, of course, narrated by Logan. He's saying that Waystar Royco is a family working together to create a net that can hold the world or catapult it forward. And there's even like a little bit of Kendall there. Seems like that was probably recorded at a time when Kendall was a little more fit. Was a little bit more...
less emotionally lobotomized.
I feel like we've seen this video before. Did we see this exact video when Cousin Greg was training
Greg
for this all the way back?
Yeah, I think watched it. Yeah.
I think that's likely. There's like a very quick flash in the pan look at Roman. He's barely there. And he calls Jerry about it. And he's like, I don't care about how many minutes I get. I just don't like the message that it sends. And I do think Roman is coming to terms, or at least he's at least awake to the reality that he is just not taken seriously here at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And then furthermore, he has to, you know, look around and see all these other people that are super excited about like low level management, basically.
Right.
And then he has to dress up.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. But like there's all sorts of different training exercises that he has to do. And like part of it is he's going to have to go undercover. but yeah, he has a lot of great phone sessions with Jerry in this episode.
Oh,
In this first one, he talks about how he's here to learn how much an egg costs. Did you find that? How much does an egg cost, Emily? Would you not know given your allergy?
I really don't know. I'm so sorry. And also, who's buying individual eggs?
I heard it was 60 cents for a dozen. No?
69 cents
for a dozen.
That was a sale going on in Long Island a few weeks back.
Yeah, so we've heard. So that's
one would wonder what the quality of those eggs are.
Not great.
There's a surplus.
Well, if you hard boil them and then you freeze the eggs and you have, but this is neither here nor there.
Disgusting.
So that's what's up with Roman. We'll check in with him in a bit. Shiv shows up. She goes and meets Logan, and it's day one of Shiv's on the job training. She's doing some management training of her own. Her day one is going a lot smoother and more enjoyably than Roman's, at least at the start, because it begins with champagne.
Oh yeah.
Champagne.
Your accent is really good.
Do you like the way I say champagne?
Yeah.
Champagne.
Did you study French?
Is it hyper decanted, the champagne? Do we know?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. She's asking where she should shit. I was going to say where she should shit. But I meant to say where she should sit.
I should hope she knows where the bathroom is.
Well, she might not. You know, I don't know how often she's been here. I would like to think yes. Her family does own the joint, that she knows where to use the potty. Apologies for my inadvertent potty mouth there. But she asked where she should sit. And she thinks that she should go to this table in the corner. We know that that's Kendall's spot. And Logan points that out as well.
Yeah.
Kendall has his own office, but we're doing the proxy battle. We like to keep it close, and that's where Kendall sits. And so Kendall comes in, and he's a little surprised to see Shiv here as well. She's not revealing why she's here yet. She's playing things close to the chest. She says she's just here to observe.
Right, but Kendall's no dummy.
He's no dummy. He's figuring out what's going on here.
Yeah.
But Kendall, we see, comes in and has Dad's medicine.
Yes.
That he comes in with like the Sunday through Saturday supply stock and like has like the exact correct order. And I guess Joe, an assistant, she missed a dose. So right now, until they have a better idea, Kendall is going to take control over Dad's medication. And right now, Kendall is Logan Roy's number one boy, right? Like he's the guy who's in charge of Logan, or he's working for Logan so specifically and so closely and so dutifully. that you would think that he is the perfect person to do this from Logan's perspective. But there's a few things about this that should raise some alarms, don't you think?
What, that he wasn't on his meds regularly?
Well, no. I think that, but so far that hasn't bared out. I mean, there is a moment in the panic room where Logan looks a little unwell. Right. And there's a little bit of concern. And even Logan himself is like a little bit like, maybe I should eat some beef jerky to calm down. So there is that. But I think that the two bigger things are, one is that we know that Kendall himself is wildly off balance. And so if something happens to Kendall, whether it's, you know, as drastic as he, you know, does not survive the season, or if he has like such a bad, such a bad breakdown, whether it's drug related or just the full weight of everything that he's going through and it takes him out of the equation, that if that happens at a very inopportune time where no one is ready to pick up the ball and keep Logan medicated, that could be very bad for Logan.
True.
Or knowing that Kendall is responsible for Logan's current drug intake.
Yeah, is he doing the wrong dosage?
Well, not
on purpose. Well, is he drugging him?
Well, not necessarily yet, but if we've talked about the possibility of, like, could Kendall have some sort of, like, wake-up moment where he decides, like, I need to reclaim some control over my life and decide to step out from his father's shadow again, and this time do it, like, you know, no half measures, Walter, like, you know, to make Mike Ehrmantraut proud and like actually go all the way, like break fully bad and do something terrible to Logan or withhold the medicine or
steal the candy and pretend it's medicine.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if we're trying to watch, like, what could Kendall do that could be like really freaking awful and cause him to strike out on his own? I think the fact that he's got the keys to Logan's health right now is a pretty big
deal. Fair enough.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Roman Roy is the world's biggest turkey. he is literally...
Did you write that in your notes?
That's what it says on the mascot's uniform. He's the world's biggest turkey, and he's at the park, and he's taking pictures with everybody, and there's like this couple there. They're like, oh, this is so great. And he's just like, you know, mouthing off at them under his breath, and like they're both like, wait, what is this turkey saying this? He says, like, this woman needs satisfaction that you are clearly not providing.
Yikes.
Very self-reflective, huh?
I was just
projecting
gonna say,
much, Roman Roy.
I know.
Gobbledygook F yourself is a great little insult that he hurls at them on his way away. So he's obviously doing great at the management.
Yeah,
training.
He's having a really good time. He makes a friend in the locker room.
He will. The Big Brian. I can't wait to talk about Big Brian. Love Brian. And I think he might be here to stay. So this is very...
Really?
Well, we'll talk about it. It's very exciting stuff.
Okay, cool.
So we cut back to what's going on at Waystar, and Greg is meeting with the Peach. And the Peach is feeling it with Greg. She's like, wow, so what's making, like, why do you want to be Tom's executive assistant? Like, you're like a farmhand. Are you milking Tom?
Ew.
And Greg's like, no, I just like, oh, I keep my head down. I keep the lattes flowing. But the Peach likes Greg. Says we should talk.
Yeah. She admires him. And of course, Tom wanders in right afterwards and he's like, Greg, latte me.
Latte time. Keep the lattes flowing. So there's a big meeting. All the grownups are at the table. Shiv is sitting in the room on the outskirts.
And Tom, being his dweebish self, is like, who's that sexy intern?
Yeah. It's like, oh, come on.
Ugh,
yeah.
It's terrible.
Freaking Tom. But everybody's in the meeting and everybody's talking and they're talking about how all the protests are happening outside and it's because of Ravenhead, who I'm really going to try hard not to call Ravenclaw because it's a Harry Potter house and I don't want to cross the streams here for a variety of reasons. But Ravenhead, people are not happy about it. They're being asked to comment on the matter. This guy allegedly like got married again at a Nazi stronghold, among other things that we've already laid out. And Tom is thinking like maybe we should fire this guy. Kendall very astutely notices that Tom is only saying this because from the outskirts of the room, Shiv is basically like mouthing to Tom like, fire him. And Kendall and Shiv are already starting to spar. I think this episode's really clever in it's setting up like this big battle of the Roy siblings that ends unexpectedly, right? Like it ends really emotionally. Like when they have that big confrontation at the end of the episode, you really think like, oh, they're about to have it out. But instead it's like, Kendall's like, no, it's not going to be me. For so many reasons that I cannot tell you. It's very intense.
Very emotional. I got emotional over it.
Very, very
but
intense.
But don't skip to the end. Keep going.
So Peach is saying, like, we don't want to fire this guy.
Because then we'd have to fire everyone else, basically. Because everyone's morally corrupt here at ATN.
She says, if we cave to this, then what do we cave to next?
I know, which is troubling.
And Logan agrees. Logan agrees. He tells Tom to rip his guts out. Turn him inside out. Let's find out everything that we need to know about the guy. But we back our talent here at Waystar Royco. Meanwhile, in the continuing adventures of presidential hopeful Connor Roy,
he's so insufferable.
There's a funeral that is in the works. It is for Mo, who we know was the rat, based on the mole patrol, as we like to do here on Post Show Recaps. It's his funeral, and Connor's going to go, and he and Willa are talking, and Willa's like, "Are you doing okay? I know funerals are very hard." And Connor basically walks in and goes, "Woohoo! Donor boner! This is going to be the best time ever," because Connor's psyched. Connor's pumped because he's going to talk to all these people who could potentially donate to his presidential campaign.
I find this a troubling idea to have at a funeral of all places.
So many things are troubling about it. Will is also a little bit troubled about it. But what we come to find out also is that Marcia, who we're not seeing anything of, we just do not see Marcia ever on this show. And again, I think that means, like, when she lands, she's gonna land like an asteroid. Like, we're gonna, it's gonna be
you're gonna say she's gonna land like an asshole.
Well, they all do. A hell of an asshole of an asteroid. Hope she knows where the bathroom is. So she's gonna land with, you know, the full impact of a meteor or meteorite. But she's talked to
meteor, Josh, not a meteorite. She's bigger than that.
She's talked to Willa apparently and said, like, talk to Mo's widow. We want you to get some intel because we know that he was talking to the writer, to the biographer, and let's find out what he said. And so Will is, like, feeling, like, a little weird about it, but Connor loves it. He's like, this is good.
Means they like you.
They're involving you in their disgusting little stratagems. They like you. So we'll get into the funeral a little bit more. Cut back to the escapades of Cousin Greg. Cousin Greg.
He's so good.
He's so great. Nicholas Braun is amazing. He shows up and Tom's like, hey, come on in, Greg. And he goes in and Tom has a colleague named Jonah, who is on all fours, bore on all fours in front of Tom. And Tom has turned him into a human footstool.
Which is troubling.
He lost a bet, right? And he says, like, well, if I lose a bet next time, I'll turn into the footstool. But he's in charge, so he'll never lose the bet. And so he tells Greg to sit down and you know, pop a squat, put your feet up. Greg puts his feet on Jonah. He's like, let me know if I'm too heavy. Which is really, really great.
Because Greg still has a moral compass.
He does.
That's the thing.
I think also, I mean, and Greg had just been, both Tom and Greg have just been very publicly humiliated, right? Like, they just were turned into boars on the floor.
Yeah, but I think, like,
and how quickly Tom turns one into a boar on the floor.
Well, Tom just, like, absorbs that energy because I feel like he's so self-conscious. And, like, it's almost like a fraternity where he's like, no, I have to do it to someone else because that's what we do here. Yeah. Things aren't upsetting at all.
He had, like, a moment of moral clarity and it's gone. The moment has passed. He's just back to, like, feeling sorry for himself and being power hungry again. But they're talking and Tom's, like, kind of, like, laying out, like, yeah, this Ravenhead thing is kind of terrible. I mean, he named his dog after Hitler's dog. Like, this is not great. But maybe Blondie is, like, a common name, you know?
It's not a common name. Unless you're making, like, a dessert bar, like Blondies. Those are delicious.
Yeah, Emily, Blondies are dessert bars. Are you from Earth? Did you not know that Blondies were dessert bars?
Yeah, I do. I'm just reiterating, everyone. I like to throw food in here every once in a while.
Spoiler alert, Emily Fox is indeed from the future where they no longer have Blondies. So that's
shut up.
I wasn't supposed
it's
to.
It's hard to make them without eggs.
I wasn't supposed to tell your
not
secrets.
Not necessarily in my orbit on a regular basis.
On the air. So you're broadcasting from.
Cool, I'll just leave.
Off
bye.
Of Earth.
I'm leaving.
No, we
the
need
panogram.
You. You've made 7-layer bars that have been absolutely delicious.
I haven't made those in a really long,
a long time. I bet you could make a mean Blondie. And we know we're doing this Labor Day weekend. We got some Blondies on the menu.
Just brown butter.
Tom says, like, if this stuff is true, it's terrible, right? Like, Nazis are bad, right? And Greg's like, yeah, no, Nazis are the worst. And so it's just Tom's like, you know, like tip-top toeing around the issue of whether or not Nazis are acceptable. Further representation of the garbage humanity at display within the Roy inner circle. You gotta laugh or you will cry.
Yeah.
Or you can do both. Both are acceptable responses to all of that.
As there's a human footstool.
All right. And so now we meet Brian. We go back to Roman. He's in like the locker room having played the role of the mascot at the park. And he's hanging out with Brian.
Brian's from the show You. Do you remember that?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He's one of the bookstore clerks.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. He works with Penn Badgley.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Hold on.
He's always like, man, why are you so creepy and weird? Well, and he's like, oh, because I am.
Well, we should look that up. We should figure out who this actor is, because I'd like to give him a quick shout out here.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, and a quick IMDb checkup that we've just paused down to do has yielded that the actor is named Zach Cherry. Zach Cherry, shout out to Zach Cherry.
Eagle-eyed Cherry.
Eagle-eyed Cherry. Zach Cherry, I'm told, who has been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Crashing. He's been in an episode of The Magicians. He's been in Broad City. He was on Divorce. Emily and I loved Divorce. The show, not the thing.
He was a party goer number four in The Big Sick.
Party goer number four in The Big Sick. And here he is showing up as Brian, who's a culturally conservative man who is just biding his time, right? He says, I'm lurking like a dormant virus. He really, he's a guy who really believes in himself.
He's got his strategy down for this management.
Yeah. So Brian is like immediately teaming up with Ron Rockstone, and Roman doesn't like want to identify himself as anybody in particular. He just wants to be anonymous through this thing as much as he possibly can. Like, he even shows up like he's got a couple buttons unbuttoned. He's got the hat.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be recognized.
Really undercover, incognito. And Brian is fully convinced on Ron Rockstone. He goes, cool, nice name. Brian, I think, is here to stay. Or at least...
Really?
So at the end of the episode, when Roman is going to get on the phone with Jerry and talk about everything that's been going on here, he says, like, I found a rough diamond that I'd like to bring back with
me. Oh, he meant Brian.
I think he meant Brian.
Oh, is Brian going to be like his assistant?
I think that Brian to Roman is going to be like Greg to Tom. First of all, Brian was a huge hit. He was remarkable in this episode. As far as like the one-off characters are concerned so far, like people who have only like had like the one-off appearance thus far, Brian, King of the Mountain on Succession. I'm hard-pressed to think of somebody who has landed with nearly as much authority as Brian. I want a Brian spinoff. I want Brian and Greg to have every single scene together. I want Brian to move in with Greg. I feel like Brian is terrific, so I hope that we're going to see a lot more of Zach Cherry on this show, and I think the fact that Roman said that, there's I found a diamond in the rough, and I want to bring him back. We got to polish him up. That's got to be Brian. They won the thing together.
That's true.
So keep an eye out. I think we're going to get more
All right,
Brian.
I'm into it.
More Brian.
More Brian. You're clearly into it.
I'm very into it. All right, so back at Waystar, Shiv's hanging out with Jerry, and she's, you know, essentially like doing nothing. You know, she's like, I'm here at the kids' table coloring books while all of you people are doing grown-up stuff. What's going on? What's happening? Jerry, I'm not an idiot. Tell me what's going on. Turns out there's like some stuff that's swirling around Kendall. That Kendall has been observed to be shoplifting. That it wasn't just the batteries that
right
he took.
We saw that one brief glimpse into him just sort of like doing that quickly and then throwing them away immediately. It sounds like he's still picking up small items,
candy, vape fluid,
of all the things to steal.
And these messes are getting cleaned up without him being alerted to it.
Maybe just steal like a chapstick that's usable. that's worthwhile.
Candy's usable.
Yeah, for 2 seconds.
I mean, the delicious 2 seconds, depending upon the candy.
Yeah, it depends.
It's like a Take Five bar. That's
what
amazing.
What if he stole, like, Smarties?
I would be disappointed.
Put that man in jail.
And I don't want to, you know...
Sorry, guys who like Smarties.
Yeah, I don't want to alienate the Smarties-loving contingent in our, you know, seven listeners of Succession here on Post.
Now we're
guys.
Down to three.
Now we're down to three. There were four of you? Yeah, good riddance. If you're picking Smarties of all the thing that you can snack on, I do think that there is
an issue
there. I
remember that was, like, the token candy my parents used to give out at Halloween. When I was really little, and then I was like, yo, get some chocolate.
I hate to say it, but your parents being Smarties people for Halloween, not a huge surprise.
I'm sure it was something where like
not
my
shocked.
Parents got it for free at like my school or something.
I love him. I would not be surprised. But he's been taking all this stuff and he's still been shoplifting, and they're just cleaning it up without him getting involved. And so I think on a couple of levels, this is great, right? Like on level number one, it's that Emily's still cracking up about her parents dishing out Smarties.
No, what if he's giving Logan Smarties instead of his actual pills?
Oh, yeah. And Logan's like, my medicine's delicious.
My medicine's really just okay, actually. It could taste better.
How's the medicine taste, Dad? And Logan's like,
chalky.
Are
you feeding me Tums? Yeah. No, they're Smarties,
no,
Dad.
They're Smarties, Dad. I thought you were smart enough to know it.
So throw a Tic Tac in there, you're good.
Tic Tac Toe, Dad. I win. So it's great on a few levels. One is that I think that clearly it's like an expression from Kendall that he kind of wants to be caught.
He wants to be caught for something. He's rebelling.
I think he's being chaotic. He wants to do something that he feels like he's got control over, but he wouldn't mind being caught for something because he has so much guilt tied into what he did and how it has just completely overturned his entire life and his existence. And it will follow him forever what happened with the man he basically killed. So there's that. But also it's so regressive, right? This is what you do as a juvenile kid.
Yeah,
you shoplift when you're a kid.
I think like everybody,
due respect to Winona Ryder and you know the teenage or young adult Winona Ryder shoplifters of the world.
Well, she was taking like scarves and stuff.
But this is like, I mean, like you take candy from a 7-Eleven as like a rebellious.
Did
act
you ever
of
steal
youth.
Anything when you were little?
Not that I remember, honestly. I would say if I remembered, if I had a story about it. And I knowing myself, like I really was too chicken to do anything.
Same.
That like. Stepped that
I've never stolen line. Anything. I was way too scared.
Didn't say I've never stolen anything, but I've never shoplifted like this. Those are stories for other times. Okay. There are some offline stories.
One time I stole some Halloween candy.
I stole my dad's Smartie supply. How did you think I got so smart?
Oh God.
So he's shoplifting like a kid. So that's still happening. Ken shows up and is talking to Shiv. He's like, so what's your next move? I love how Ken tries to relate to people. It's like, so hey, what's your move? What's your next move? What are you gonna do?
Well, he does have like this weird interpersonal block, right? Like he's not able to just interact with people on a very basic like human level.
That's like been baked into him from the very go.
And I think it's even worse now that he like truly is emotionally like unstable, right?
Like vapid. Yeah. So I think like that's tough for him. So it's just not working. And like he's like, you know, asking her all these probing questions. And Shiv, who through much of this episode, I think, is not feeling great about the way that like Logan is looking at Kendall and the way that Kendall is acting and all of this and feeling like she's in competition with Kendall. She says to him, like, you seem to be mistaking me for someone you're in competition with. Which is both like deflective of like what she actually is doing here,
but also indicative of the fact that that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. But I think also like her, like, you know, brushing off her shoulders and being like, I got this, right? Like, it's kind of like a cocky thing to say. It's sort of an arrogant thing to say. So the protests are intensifying outside. And so to get anybody into the building, especially somebody as high up and, you know, worth being protected, given the reputation clash, as Rhea Jarrell is going to have to come in under cloak and dagger. So enter Holly Hunter. We're thrilled to have her in the mix. She is as great as I hoped she would be, if not greater.
Yeah, she's excellent in this role, I think.
Has this amazing line about how like the Pierces, who've owned PGM for 150 years, their answer to the offer for a buyout is a balanced and nuanced fuck off. That's the message.
Which I love. That and was actually amazing. She's speaking the same language as Logan to an extent. She's a little bit more rehearsed and lyrical about it, I guess.
They're very even keel. I mean, like,
they both love to say fuck off, so there you go.
This is the beauty of Succession. It's just like this, you know, these volleys of dialogue, these rallies that are going back and forth forever. And she's just, she's so good. Holly Hunter is amazing, and I'm so happy that she's here. And, like, she's playing this big game of, like, I'm a chief executive. I'm a pawn in a greater game. I take orders from the board. I'm just a tool. And she says that the Pierces, they're great custodians of PGM. And, you know, Kendall takes interest in this. Like, ah, I see. Like, you don't want to take a position because if you do, like, you know, you don't want to ruin things for whoever you're working for. And
she's got a good poker face on.
She does. And like she's wanting to clear out of there relatively quickly.
She only eats Pulitzers.
It's funny. Yeah. Like,
I love that.
Logan invites her for lunch and she has that great line. Well, sorry, I have an upset. I have an easily irritated tummy. We only eat Pulitzers over at Pierce. That's awesome. Mm.
It's just so good.
How do they taste? I'd love to know. But I think it is great that like we know Logan in like the context of him being like either with his family and so feeling unfiltered or really sick and reeling from that, and so mostly feeling unfiltered. But we've had, like, I feel like anyway, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like the times where Logan has looked out and has, like, been locked in with somebody who he has to, like, be relatively measured with.
Right.
And, like, act in such a way.
He's incredibly cordial in this moment.
Yeah, like, he's really balanced. He's even. And, like, you can see from the way he interacts with Rhea that, like, I understand how he's able to like, survive moments like this, right?
Yeah, because he can control himself at least to an extent. He can still, you know, say some pretty nasty things, but I think he can do it in a way where he's not raising his voice, he's not threatening. He's just being very firm with his position, which is what we would always expect from him, right?
Yeah, so it's good stuff. You know, it's certainly drawing these two agencies closer to together. Back at the park, the continuing adventures of Ron Rockstone and Brian, as they, like, have this, like, you know, everybody has to, like, get together and they have to come up with these, you know, these, like, dream assignments, right? Like, they have to come up with, like, these, like, different attractions for normal people.
And I love how threatened, you know, Roman becomes, where he's like, what is this, school?
It's like, what normal
I didn't
people?
Come here.
It's like, what
yeah.
are normal people like? I don't know what normal people like. I like to snort designer Coke. That's what I like to do. What do you like to do, Brian, you normal person?
I like
Brian?
To hang out with my nephews.
Yeah, Cooper and Clark. God, I hope we meet Cooper and Clark.
I think that won you over.
When Brian said Cooper and Clark, I died. I died inside and then was reborn a believer in Brian, the life of Brian. That's all I want to know.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, Roman's like, you know what people enjoy? They enjoy terror. Like a true VR experience where you really think you're going to die, like war. Like, imagine, like, Normandy, and, like, getting off the gunboats and approaching the beach. And Brian says, oh, yeah, that's good. Like, no one's ever gotten busted overestimating the American interest in violence. Which is a good lead into
yes.
what we're about to get
I
into.
I was just going to say, what an excellent segue.
You know, I think that's something else that's been great about this season of Succession so far, is how tight the plotting is, like the thematic plotting of any given episode.
Right.
Of, like, how everything, like, bobbed and weaved throughout the Summer Palace in Summer Palace, or everything kind of revolved around the hunting, you know, the hunting party in hunting last week. And this, everything kind of, like, revolves around
the panic
surrounding this, what they believe to be an active shooter situation, but ends up being the suicide of a segment producer. And I think that's been really, really helpful, as they've honed in on sort of, like, these core themes, these core ideas, and how everybody wants something different. Everybody's angle is different, and everybody's angle is in competition with each other. But how could you put those things into collision while also, you know, like, telling a story that's relatively tight? And so they've just been able to, like, skewer, like, the core ball in so many different directions and in so many ways, but it's all threaded through the same eye of the needle. And I think that's great. Like, that was something that in watching the episode, it didn't even occur to me that they were kind of setting up the panic room of it all, the safe room of it all. But in retrospect, when you think about that, like, that they're just talking about American interest in violence, and then we get into you know, the terror that comes from an active shooter situation. Just really, really smart writing.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, so the way we get into that stuff at Waystar is starting off with Tom meeting Ravenhead, and it's our introduction to Ravenhead. I don't know who this actor is offhand. Please let
I
us know.
I don't either. He was not in You, from as far as
so
I can tell.
We will not stop down for an IMDb check. So people, please let us know who that is. I'm sure it's somebody who I should know, and I just do not, and I apologize to that actor and to the people who are, like, being like, Wiglardo! But he's coming in to be eviscerated as per Logan's orders, right? Like, Tom needs to turn him upside down.
Yeah.
It's due diligence. And Tom, who is such a coward, right? Like, he's such a lame-o. He's like, oh, it's just due diligence. It's going to be fine. And, like, he's just, like, light.
He's like, I'm embarrassed to, like, even ask you this question.
Just a few boxes to check off. And it's like, is the dog thing, is that real? And he's like, no, different spelling. Have you ever been a member of the Nazi party? He's like, Tom, are you serious?
Yeah.
He's like, how many times have you read Mein Kampf? Just a couple.
Yeah.
And that's Tom's great line. Are there Easter eggs that you missed? Like,
the first
what?
Time around, yeah.
And no, he's just, like, interested in that period of history. And Tom goes, oh, okay. What specifically about that period of history? And Ravenhead says the scale, the tragedy, how Europe was decimated. And he, like, lists off the numbers of Germans and Russians and Polish people who lost their lives. And Tom is waiting for him to talk about
conveniently
all of the people killed in, you know, concentration camps and everybody who was killed by the Nazis. And Tom says, it seems like you're short a few million.
Yeah.
But before they can continue any further, a gunshot is heard. And so everybody is on high alert. They think there's a shooter in the building. Everybody's got to go to a safe room. And Tom and Greg just full tilt sprint to the safe room.
I mean, Tom literally throws a woman against the wall to get her out of the way.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty insane.
Pandemonium at Waystar. Tom and Greg, they wind up in this tiny little office room. It's got like bottled water. It's got chips. It's got Snyder's pretzels, those little nuggets. Anything you need to survive a terrible situation like this, including a security guard who has like no time for Tom and Greg's bullshit.
yeah, it just seems to be standing there at the door and, you know, listening as a security guard would to like whatever's coming over radio. But it doesn't feel like the most safe panic room.
Absolutely not. And this is what they all notice, that like Greg is, you know, Greg is the one who's saying like, this is bad. There's like a window above there. We got the shit room. There's like, they could launch gas in here. They could get into here. An attack child could get in from above. So they're noticing all of that, and they've got, you know, no real clue of what to do. And at first, like, Greg's like, we should get out of here. And Tom is like, no, this is the safe room. This is the safe room. And he's going to get in touch with Shiv,
who is in the actual safe room.
Like, she winds up with Logan, and they're in, like, the true panic room.
I mean, it looks very cushy and comfortable, doesn't
very,
it?
Very cushy and comfortable. I mean, like, it's like a room out of 24. Like, this is where David Palmer goes when there's the threat of a nuclear bomb attack in L.A. or in California in 24. I believe, actually, at the time, he's in Oregon on a fishing trip with his son, Keith. And he goes to a military compound there. I think he's out of whatever threatened blast radius there is. But the point still stands, Emily. Are you in good hands? I thought that maybe that would bring you back in.
I never know his real name because you always call him David Palmer.
Dennis Haysbert, but he is David Palmer to me forever.
I know.
But I mean, like, this is like the command bunker is where Logan and Shiv wind up, and Kendall eventually will get here. But at first, he's on the rooftop.
Right.
Once again, smoking on the rooftop.
Love that.
So he doesn't know.
Was he vaping on the rooftop?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if he knows what's going on.
I think he's completely blind to everything that's happening below him.
Or he doesn't care. It's also possible.
Could be it.
You know, because when he does eventually come to the safe room. But
I think it's probably because he's found. He probably came down in the stairs being undetected otherwise.
Yeah, but I think also like he just sort of like, you know, wanders through. Like, I feel like, you know, Kendall is walking through life in a way of like whatever happens, happens.
Well, like I said, he's emotionally lobotomized at this point. Yeah, he's just gone.
He's a ghost, right? But I mean, like, he might not be concerned for his well-being, but Logan is.
Yes.
Logan's very panicked about Kendall. I feel like this is telling on a few levels. I feel like it's telling because it's potentially telling of a couple of things. It could be telling that Logan actually genuinely does care about his children, and if something happened to his children, he would have an actual human reaction, which is kind of hard to picture. But he's having a human reaction to where is Kendall right now. You know, he knows Shiv is safe. So, like, is he actually being like a human here? Is that possible?
Does he think Kendall's the shooter?
No, I doubt that I mean, maybe. I guess maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, Logan knows that things are so grim with Kendall.
Yeah.
That, like, what if he's just gone fully off the rails?
What if he went postal?
It's not impossible that, like, he's just like, what if it's Kendall?
Yeah.
You know, because he's been keeping, he's the one of the only people who knows what's actually going on.
And you know what? We have the Kendall's idea of like where we're watching him, the threat of suicide. It ends up not being Kendall who kills himself.
Right.
So that's kind of crazy to think about how those are threaded together.
And maybe he could think that it was that too, right? Like that it's not just like Kendall has gone, like he's decided to shoot up Waystar Royco, but has actually decided to take his own life because of like the severity of everything. Right. So there could be like elements of that. But Logan is going to be like a lot of positive reinforcement in Kendall. And I think very like genuinely impressed by Kendall throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Kendall is going to be the guy who says I'm not the guy. It's not going to be me. We're still watching this, right? Like we're still watching where does Logan's loyalty actually lie? Does he want it to be Shiv or is he still trying to groom Kendall? And is that possibly why Logan is so panicked about Kendall? Because Kendall is his number one boy. Kendall is the successor.
And he does favor men over women.
Exactly.
Right.
So, interesting. Tom is so mad that they're in the shit room. It's so funny. He's just like, he's losing his mind.
Well, do we want to talk about how things escalate?
Yeah, things really escalate. They're eventually like, we're going to get a couple of other things happen first. Rhea's going to come to the panic room. Jerry's going to come to the panic room, the actual panic room. Shiv and Rhea know each other a little bit, so they're going to get into it a bit. Roman at his management training, he's going to be removed or given the option to be removed because there could be a threat on your life. And everyone's like, yeah, if you can get me out of this stupid thing, I would
happily just... Of course he obliges.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled to just leave this. This is terrible. I hate this. And Connor's at the funeral where he doesn't have to worry about too much. He thinks that he's fine. He's the lone representative of the Roys at Lester, not Mo. His name is not actually Mo. His name is Lester, a.k.a. Uncle Meat Hands, who we come to find out has the name Lester because of Mo Lester. And Will's like, really? Is that like what he was? Because like Will has like embarrassed herself by accident by saying like, I've heard such nice things about Mo. And Lester's, you know, widow is like, who?
and all of us are sitting there being like, what does that mean? Because you and I looked at each other and we're like, oh, yeah, what does it mean? Like, what does Mo stand for?
And it's just the Roys had an awful nickname
they
for him.
They called him Mo Lester.
Though maybe Lester.
Which is terrible.
Yeah, but maybe Lester was a molester. It's what you come to find out. That Logan wouldn't let the kids in the pool with him.
Yeah.
And Connor is like, guys of that generation, it was a different time.
But you have to remember, I think one of the funniest moments, which is, it just goes almost under the radar, is Connor trying to figure out what his eulogizing is going to sound like. And he looks to Willow really quick and he goes, well, how does this sound? Lester touched all of us.
Lester touched us all. Lester touched us all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he's thinking of his eulogy.
Yeah. It literally decimated me.
Oh, my God. That was
really... I was laughing so hard at that.
Really funny.
And that's one of those Arrested Development moments, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, absolutely.
But moving forward.
Yeah, so we'll talk about another Arrested Development type of moment. Emily and I, of course, maybe you don't know, hopefully you do, we were recapping Big Little Lies while Big Little Lies was on, and there was a character dynamic during Big Little Lies that really aggravated us between like these two men who were in like constant frenemy fights with each other, and it always just like really fell flat. It just like totally did not feel like it aligned
with
anything
incredibly contrived
that was happening on the show. And the Greg and Tom stuff is like what they were trying to do in Big Little Lies but done so brilliantly.
It's
and
literally
so well.
Magic.
It's so funny. Like Greg wants to like take this opportunity now that they're in this intimate setting to like stop down with Tom and be like, I don't want to be working for ATN. I'm in the shadow of a giant here. I need to catch some sunlight. I gotta grow. I need to leave you. Maybe
such
we could,
a good metaphor.
Maybe we could have like a business open relationship. And that's triggering for Tom, who's in an actual open relationship that he does not want to be in.
And then water bottles just go
flying.
Security.
There's so many funny lines in this scene. Tom saying, are you attempting to break up with me, Greg? Greg saying like, I don't know. ATN, human furniture, the verbal assaults, the Nazi stuff, shooters. I just don't love it. I don't really love it. It's hilarious. Tom says, you know, this is not a good feeling, Greg, that you're making me have. It's just the way that that's written and how that like turns and swirls in the mouth of Matthew McFady and the actor is so, so good. He yells at the guy with his crunchy pretzels, like, stop chewing on those Snyders. Cut it out. And he starts freaking out because he can't open the water bottle. He doesn't have the man strength to do it.
Oh,
he can't do it.
That's what his executive assistant's
yeah,
for.
I know. Yeah, this is Greg's job. You're supposed to open my water bottles for me. He can't do it. And Greg's like, no, we're good. Relax, Tom. It's going to be okay. So I was like, we're good. Doesn't feel good, Greg. I will not let you do this to me. I will not let go of what is mine.
I just love the idea of the other two people and the security guard being stuck in there with this.
Greg's imploring the security guy. Says, security, help! Greg says, Tom, no, we're friends. You're one of my best friends. Like, don't do this.
Oh, such a good way to leave the scene.
So funny. So in the actual panic room, the actual safe room, here comes Kendall, straight to the bathroom. Beelines it to the bathroom. You gotta wonder why. He knows where the bathroom is,
Emily. Little bit of nose candy.
He knows where the bathroom is.
Shiv did not.
Shiv did not. Kendall knows exactly.
Shivved all over the couch.
Yes, Kendall shivving in the bathroom. as Logan is there, and they come to find out what had actually happened. That was a segment producer who shot himself. They need another 20 minutes to stay on lockdown just to do a sweep. Rhea has a line at one point where she's like, you guys have really gone out of your way to keep me here for, you know, a little bit longer. And I'll admit, like, there was a moment earlier in the episode where it's like, is this some sort of fake news concocted by Logan and Kendall to keep Rhea in place for longer? That felt beneath this show. Like,
yeah.
That's like the Fox Channel version of this. Like, this is like prime time. That was out of 24. Yeah. You know, like, that's a 24 plot twist.
We've elevated this a little bit. The standards are higher.
Yeah. But Rey's like trying to figure out why Shiv's here, and Shiv is like kind of sick of like getting this type of question from people. And Shiv's like, my family kind of owns the joint, if you don't notice. Mm. And so everybody's like trying to like feel each other out. Shiv is trying to like, cause Shiv doesn't like this. She doesn't want Waystar to buy PGM. I think for like those reasons of, if we buy PGM, we'll just corrupt it. The world needs PGM. And Shiv does fancy herself a progressive and somebody who's of a very different political bent than the rest of her family. But Kendall is saying like, relax, Shiv, we've got this. We've had a good chat. And Rhea is like, well, it was a good chat, but it was a hard, I thought the takeaway was that it was a hard no. And she was like, that's good, because I don't see it. And Rhea's like, oh, well, I see it. I think that it's fine. I think that, you know, culturally, we would be having a hard time being aligned. I think that, like, we have the same structures. I think that, we would be very similar deals, but it's just like we don't believe in the same stuff. And Logan says, or no, it's Kendall who says, isn't that something that $21 billion could solve?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that something that, like, maybe you could take back to the Pierces?
The proverbial briefcase on the table filled with cash.
Exactly. Like, he drops it and he starts ramping it up. It goes from 21 to 21.5 to 22. And Shiv's like, Dad, can he just do that? And Logan's not stopping him.
No.
Logan's impressed.
He's looking back and smiling a little bit, too.
He's impressed and he's getting in on it, too. Mm-hmm. He has a great self-description. He says, I'm a hairy old bastard who everybody hates. Yada, yada. But I fucking love news and news people. I want to invest in you. That's what he wants to do. Or so he says. And he keeps saying, like, can you trust me? If I say that we won't screw you over, that we'll keep your brand and your instincts and your people, would you trust me? And would you tell them that they should trust me as well? Because when I say something will happen, that thing will happen. Am I right, kids?
And they are, you know.
They're both like, right, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Shiv is waiting to see if she can trust him.
She's like, yeah, I think so.
You know, and it's a great meta comment of like, can we trust that Logan is really going to hand the keys over to Shiv? And we're certainly worried that he's not. Is his word stronger than oak? And that has not always proven to be so strong, if Jerry Maguire taught us anything.
I just thought of Jerry in the show, and I was like, Jerry's last name is Maguire?
That'd be a great, great spinoff. And so he says,
show me the money.
He said, show me the money. Oh my God.
Sorry.
He says that the number, Emily, and the irony here, given some of what we've talked about, is $24 billion.
Mm.
$24 billion is the money he would like to show. Take that back to the Pierces and tell them that you can trust me. Not for nothing, but one of the Pierces who we will meet, it looks like based on the preview for next week's episode, is played by Cherry Jones, who was President Allison Taylor for the final two full seasons of 24.
Wow.
Seasons 7 and 8.
We're all connected.
It's all connected. New York Telephone. But like, that seems interesting, right? Like, that seems interesting for people. Back at the park, Brian shows up to Ron Rockstone. Goes, hey, Ron Rockstone, guess what? Guess what happened? And Ron Rockstone, aka Roman Roy, says, are you trying to do suspense on me, Brian? And they won. They won the competition.
And Roman doesn't really believe it, because he's like, whatever, I've been revealed to be myself. Like, there's
it's
like, no
it's because
way
of my name, right? Yeah. Like, it's just because of who I am. There's no way. And so Brian says, let's go. Well, I'll prove it to you. And so they go, and we never see it. Like, we never see the proof. But what we do get later from our next Roman scene is when he's on the phone with Jerry. He's like, I'm going to be bringing back a diamond in the rough. So that must mean that, like, he likes Brian as an ideas
guy. Yeah, he has some confidence in him.
That maybe Brian was right.
Yeah.
And he's good. He's got solid follow through.
And I think it's actually kind of telling and shows that maybe Roman did need some sort of training.
I mean, yes, 100%. 1,000,000%.
I mean, obviously we know that.
24 billion%.
But for him to come out of it, and actually be like, that was probably worth my while.
Yeah.
All right. I've at least met or connected with someone that's important.
Yeah. Okay. So at the safe room, Tom and Greg are going to be released. And they're, you know, simmering tensions. Tom admits that, I don't always like who I am, Greg, which is funny.
Ain't that the truth? We can feel it.
And they talk a little more, and Tom's like, I don't want to let you go. You're smart. You're ambitious. You're loyal. And Greg says, oh, look, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do this, but I have some leverage, and I'm reluctant to use it. And I don't want to sour things between us, Tom. I don't want to bring this up as a threat, but you know, when you told me to destroy the documents at Cruise's, and Tom goes, no. Because like, I didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Greg says, I kept a few of them just in case I ever got in trouble. And Tom says, are you trying to blackmail me, Greg? And Greg's like, I'm not trying to blackmail
you. Are you asking if you can blackmail me?
And Tom says, you know what? I'm saying, yes, you can. You can blackmail me. I accept your blackmail. I'm giving you a new title. I'm going to give you a ton more money. You're going to sit at the big table. Would you like that? And Greg's like, yeah, yeah, I think I would. I think I would like that. And Tom says, you little fuck, look at you. Where are they? Where are the papers? And Greg is now like, he's happier. Things are great. Things are better for Greg.
So, I'll never tell.
I'll never tell. Tom loves it. You effing slime ball. That a boy. So proud.
Oh, it's
so
weird.
He's so proud of cousin Greg.
I think you and I laughed the hardest at this particular scene.
We laughed very hard. The only time we laughed harder today were the three times we false started this podcast. which unfortunately you will never hear, people, but it took a while before we were able to do this.
I'll never tell where those tracks are.
Some things transpired. They're deleted. I shredded the documents.
They were really funny.
It was very funny.
I might have kept a few.
It was bad. We had to stop down for like 10 minutes because it was too much, but here we are. We're back. We're fine. Back. Everything's good. Everything's great. Everything's fine. Another big guffaw though was at the funeral where Connor's, Lester touched all of us. Will's like, maybe you shouldn't go on the record with like, you know, praising Lester just in case you are going to run for president, like if it comes out that he's a bad guy. Michelle Pansel is here, the biographer, and Connor is not wanting to talk to her. Connor says, I've been interested in politics at a very young age, and that's my quote. Connor Roy was interested in politics at a very young age. Michelle says, it's not an interview, we're just two people chatting at a funeral. And this is when Connor goes and eulogizes Lester, and it's a remarkable eulogy.
Much like how I opened the podcast.
Yes, it's so great. So this is Connor's eulogy. I am here as a fellow human to acknowledge that Lester has passed on. Lester was a man. Also, Lester was an employee of Waystar for 40 years. When a man dies, it is sad. All of us will die one day. In this case, it is Lester who has done so. Lester was alive for 78 years, but no more. Now he is dead. Lester's wife is Maria. They were married for 15 years. Now she is sad. That's the eulogy.
Oh, boy.
Excellent. Hilarious. Amazing. Yeah. Incredible.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Okay, so things wrap up over at Waystar. The lockdown is lifted. They're seeing Rhea off. And she says, if we don't see each other soon, at least we'll always have the panic room. Logan is saying like, will you take the number that I gave you, and will you take that back to them and tell them that you can trust me? And she says, I promise I'll be honest about what I feel. But if you're serious about this, she says, you should make a peace offering. And we watched it pretty quickly, so I didn't fully get what was going on. I think I got the sense that she was saying that, like, you got to kill this Ravenhead dude or whatever the frick his name is.
Yeah, no, it's just his smart business to get rid of him.
Just get rid of him. Show us you're serious if, like, you're actually going to work with us.
Because he's a blatant Nazi.
Yeah, so I would not be surprised if they just they crush that skull. If that skull is thrown onto the pile.
Oh boy.
Pretty soon. So we'll see what goes on there. But as she leaves, Logan says, good job, son, to Ken. Says absolutely nothing to Shiv,
which
gives her a nod, gives her like a wink.
Yeah, that hurts a little.
Hurts a lot.
Yeah, because I think Shiv did help with the meeting in the panic room, even if she was sort of silenced halfway through.
Well, they both kind of like played good cop, bad cop to some degree. Actually, like, you know,
it was like a really good dynamic.
Shiv and Ken were a good team. I think that there was like a tension there that that this deal, like, not that there's a deal yet, but that like the interest that like a number that is interesting.
Right.
Was able to come out of it.
And the fact that, like, Shiv and Rhea obviously have a rapport was helpful also.
I think it was. But Logan is really giving the credit to his number one boy. Meanwhile, Roman is still at training camp where he's going to be for 6 weeks. So maybe we're going to see him there for a little while longer, unless he chooses to leave early or the show time jumps or whatever. But
it would not surprise me if he taps out soon.
Yeah. Well, he taps out of phone sex with Tabitha. He's calling her to give her the update on everything, and everything's going great. And they're like, oh, are we about to do this? You're getting in the tub. And it is there is zero chemistry. Zero chemistry whatsoever.
It's pretty uncomfortable and hilarious.
You know, there's a lot of questions around, like, what is Roman's deal? What's going on with Roman? It's been brought up on the show multiple times through multiple relationships that, like, Roman does not seem to, like, have sex with his partners. There's been questions like, is Roman gay? Is that something that's going on? This episode, at the very least, seems to push the narrative of people who think that Roman is into Jerry. And there have been people who've been saying that for a while.
I mean, they've always had sort of like this weird flirtatious, like, mother-son thing going on.
But he gets off, masturbating while having, like, dirty talk with Jerry as she's just, like, calling him, you're a very bad boy. You're worse than a spoiled brat.
My favorite is watching Jerry realize that this is happening.
You're a revolting little Warren.
She's, like, drinking a martini watching Pierce News, yeah. Which is the funniest part.
Yeah, for Jerry, the widowed life isn't so bad so far. Saying, you little slime puppy.
Oh, God.
You're pathetic. So who knows what's happening, but Roman, he's a complex guy, sweetheart. Sawyer would say. So we get to the end of the episode, and it's the meetup between Shiv and Ken, and Sarah Snook and Jeremy Strong are just so excellent in this scene, where she comes to him now, much like Ken came to her earlier in the episode, and says, "What's going on with you and Dad?" And, like, he's not really saying, she's pushing. She's not, like, letting him get away with just, like, we're in a good place. She says, is there a deal? He goes, I promise you there's no deal. And she says, then why is he protecting you? But, like, the drugs and the shoplifting. So she's just, like, talking to him, like, pretty, giving him the
matter
real.
Matter of fact, yeah.
Like, because, like, now he knows that, like, he's being watched, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, maybe he's concerned for whatever reason. I don't know. You got to ask him. And she's like, why can't you tell me what's going on?
I thought for a second he might break and tell her.
I thought so too.
And that probably would have made them closer, but also would have given her more leverage, right? So he's, like, playing it safe even with the closest of family.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he has he hasn't said it, but, like, he's been so emotional about it, and it's such a display of vulnerability that, even without giving her the information, it's a where there's smoke, there's fire type of deal.
Right.
Like, there's no way that now Shiv, who was really aggressively mean to him at the start of the season, and not unjustifiably so, given, like, from her worldview, what he was doing, though I think a lot of what she was saying is fairly ironic coming from Shiv. I think this is, like, a moment where she's now realizing, like, okay,
something happened.
Something has happened, and it's not good.
Yeah.
And Ken's like, come on, give me a hug. And she's like, all right, I'll hug you. I guess enough time has passed at this point that, like, we're still siblings, and clearly you are on the level here right now to some degree. Like, you're at least working for Dad. When he hugs her, like, he's, like, breaking down. But she finally notices, like, you're not doing well. And Kendall does say, like, I would just ask that you take care of me.
Ugh.
Because if Dad didn't need me right now, I don't exactly know what I would be for.
Isn't that devastating? I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
You and I were both very emotional watching it.
Such a good scene.
You were crying a little bit. Like, it was intense.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue on this show. That line, I would just ask that you take care of me because if Dad didn't need me right now, I don't exactly know what I would be for. It's just, like, such, like, a human English sentence, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it is, like, it's not, like, a tightly scripted thing that is just, like, perfectly poetic. It is just like it is like a garbled, weird mouth feel expression of
like lost
vulnerability and loss, yeah. And like wanting to say more than you by the end of the sentence realize you should say. You know, like, he starts off with the because, like, maybe is he about to explain where he's at, and then, like, the rest of the sentence falls apart into, like, some sort of, like, little mush, where, like, he's decided, like, I can't fully open up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. It's brilliant.
It's really well done.
And she says, you want to talk more? He says, I can't, but thank you. And yeah, it's not going to be me. You don't have to worry about it.
Oh.
So I think a lot's going on here. Kendall is, his dreams have collapsed. Everything that he was living for has collapsed. He's at the beck and call of his father. If Dad didn't need me, I don't know what I would be for. Meaning, like, I wouldn't be alive. I wouldn't have purpose. You know, I think he feels like some need to atone for something, and he feels like his best route for that is through father right now, his father.
But it, it's basically boiled down to him sitting at that desk by himself,
mm-hmm.
and handing pills to his dad.
Right, right. And I think that like he's smart enough to know at this point that he is that Shiv has been given the nod,
right.
That she thinks that she's in line for this. Like he's you know, she was here to observe, but he's been observing and he's figured that out. And he's like, you don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to be the guy. But I think that in Logan's mind, he is yeah. where I'm planting my flag right now.
Got it. It's complicated.
And
very, very complicated.
The episode ends with him on the roof. Once again, next day, he's just back up on the roof. He's just constantly thinking about where he's going to go next.
Now what do? We don't even have any feedback.
I know.
How depressing is this?
I know. So that's where
What's your feedback? Well, any comments, Josh?
No, it was a great episode of a great show. But we're going to get into your feedback.
Yes.
We want it. Send it our way. We're going to have a feedback show coming up in a little while here on Post Show Recaps. Tweet at us at Post Show Recaps. I am at Round Howard. Emily is at Emilet. You could also send us feedback at postshowrecaps.com/feedback is our feedback form. Subscribe to our Succession feed if you have not already. Please rate us. Please review us. We'd like all those things to be done.
Yeah. And have a great Labor Day weekend.
Oh, fantastic Labor Day weekend.
What a nice way to kick it off.
Have an incredible time.
Yeah.
Go see a movie.
Barbecue.
Go barbecue.
Don't labor if you can help
Nap,
it.
Nap. Sleep in a little bit if you can.
Yeah.
Go to the beach if you can.
Kick those feet up onto a normal ottoman,
Listen to the Tabula Rasa episode of Lost Down the Hatch, a new podcast that we've got here on Post Show Recaps, in case you're not aware, and subscribe to that feed as well, postshowrecaps.com/downthehatch, and rate and review us. We would appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Next Succession episode will be a feedback show here on Post Show Recaps. Next Succession episode of Succession itself is going to be called Turnhaven, and spelled T-E-R-N, which is, Emily, perhaps you already know, a bird.
I didn't know that.
A seabird related to the gulls, typically smaller and more slender, with long pointed wings and like a forked tail.
Like the opposite of
you
an
like
albatross.
How I said forked instead of forked.
Orchid.
So we'll have to find out what that's all about. As for what we're all about getting out of this podcast and going and enjoying the weekend ourselves. And we hope that you have had a nice time with this earlier than expected Succession podcast. It was a treat for us.
It was a delight. I just want to eat a whole bag of Smarties now.
All right. We're going to go eat some Smarties. We'll see you later, all you Smarties out there.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. And before we close out today's Succession podcast, one last thanks to our friends over at TrueCar. 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you could do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.